New data from Inscape, Deloitte and HarrisX show how traditional models like movie-going and pay TV subscriptions are being supplanted by streaming. Listen on to learn more.
Welcome to this week's edition of Inside the Stream. This is Will Richmond from Video News. And that was Colin Dixon there at the beginning, back from England. Colin, how was your trip?
It was super, Will. We had a really great time. It's nice to be back in the sun. It's always a little overcast and grey in the UK. Well, not always, but a lot of the time. But it's nice to be back here in the sun. And boy, we have a ton of stuff to talk about this week.
Yeah, we have some great data to cover this week that's caught our attention. We have a couple of news items also to get started, and you're, I think, going to get us going.
I am, and back during the Super Bowl, we talked about some of the data that Paramount Global gave us, and one of the things they didn't really give us an idea of is precisely how many people watched the streamed Super Bowl on Paramount Plus. So that sort of left us hanging. But our friends at Antenna have at least given us some data. They say that Super Bowl helped generate 3.4 million signups for Paramount Plus, which is, I think, pretty damn good performance, Will. That's really exciting for them, particularly because they also said that Peacock has managed to hold on to 71% of the signups for their wildcard game that they broadcast. Remember, they had an exclusive wildcard game, which Antenna says gave them 3 million signups, and that 71% have still stuck around. So that is, I think, pretty encouraging for Paramount Plus, particularly with all the rumors of mergers and sales and whatever swirling around Paramount Global.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if the numbers from Antenna are close to reality, I would say that Super Bowl was a real win for them.
It was indeed. So that's great. And there was, I just want to mention one other piece, Will. And I was so pleased to see this. One of the things that I've always been so excited about the internet for TV is that it allows smaller services to connect with their audiences in a way that they weren't able to do so before. And Playworks is doing exactly that. They have launched Chess.com, which is an AVOD app. It's free and supported by ads, I guess, for chess fans everywhere. So I think that's a great use of the internet right there. But anyway, what caught your eye in the news this week?
Well, not to take anything away from chess's popularity, but the biggest or most popular, I think, event that's going to happen this year is going to be the 2024 Olympics from Paris. And on that front, NBC Universal announced yesterday, we're recording on Thursday, that Peacock, which will be streaming the Olympics, is going to be offering a quote-unquote multi-view feature, which will mean that Peacock subscribers can watch four simultaneous live sporting events. And that, I think, is going to be really, really popular for people who like to watch the Olympics but find themselves challenged to watch what they want when they want. And we know from prior podcasts that YouTube TV released this same multicast, multi-view feature last year, coincident with the with March Madness. And I've used it a bunch of times. I think it's really, really neat. I think for, you know, anybody who's a sports fan who wants to be able to watch more than one feed at once, it's just a great application of technology. One thing that it sounds like Peacock is going to allow is full customization of the four windows. So YouTube TV started off not allowing that. It was a preset package of four streams that YouTube TV had determined. Sounds like Peacock is going to allow viewers to pick from up to 30 different streams to put into their multi-view. So I think it's going to be really exciting. And I like how they're continuing to innovate on the technology side to make the viewer experience better.
My mind is boggled, Will. There are so many different sports in the Olympics, and really now using this feature, you don't have to miss anything. I assume that they'll be broadcasting everything, pretty much everything, live through the app. And since it's in France, they're going to be 9 hours ahead of us. So our breakfasts, oh my goodness, we're going to be absorbed with goodness knows what, 4 different streams at the same time. It's going to be fun to try it out. As a Peacock subscriber for the Premier League, I'll certainly continue my subscription for the Summer Olympics. So that's a keeper for me. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to trying it.
Wall-to-wall Summer Olympics is what we have to look forward to for sure. I think we listeners might remember we took Peacock to task a little bit last time around because recall, Colin, that they were slow in releasing some of the clips, some of the replays of the winning events after they were already up on YouTube. So hopefully they'll have that sequencing down a little bit better this time around.
Yeah, yeah. It would be nice for the people that are paying to watch,
yes,
for them,
yes,
to get those clips before the people that aren't. That would be very nice.
Exactly. So let's turn our attention now to some of the research that we were looking at this week. We've got research from Inscape, from Deloitte, and from Harris. Sumi, you're going to get us started with the Inscape data.
I am. And, you know, one of the things that I really like about the Inscape data, Will, is we talk about survey data a lot on the podcast. That's very often, I mean, you can get survey data pretty much independent of any service or any device. One of the great things about the Inscape data is that they're really taking actual usage from the 22 million opt-in Vizio TV users out there. So it really gives you a very representative sample of what's actually happening on TVs today, or I should say on connected TVs today. So that's one of the reasons why I really like this data. And it actually comes from Q4 2023. And so I guess the first thing to talk about is the number of services that people are using. We see this in survey samples, but this actually tells you what Inscape is seeing us use on a daily or weekly or monthly basis. So in Q4 of 2023, Inscape says that the average number of native apps used per connected TV was 5.5. And that's only up very, very slightly from the previous two quarters, which was 5.4. So it looks like this is correlating very well with some of the survey data, which also says that the number of services that we're using has plateaued a little bit. And in fact, I've seen some data just recently that says it's actually come down a little bit in Q1. So I should note, they're talking about native apps here. And all that means is that these are apps that have been created specifically for Vizio's SmartCast operating system, TV operating system. So, you know, it's just the Netflix app or the Hulu app or whatever. Many of them have been ported and run natively on SmartCast. So 5.5 apps per connected TV. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And as I say, there was some Omdia data that actually showed the SVOD subscriptions being used per US household was at about 3.5, which was down 10% from November. So you remember that this would also include free services from Inscape, free services like Tubi and Pluto TV in that 5.5. So are you using that many apps, Will?
5.5. Yeah, I would say. How about you?
Yeah, oh, totally. I'm using way more than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say way more than that, but I would say maybe, I mean, I'd really need to think about it just a little bit, but maybe like 6 or 7 on a regular basis.
My Vizio TV I've actually got in my garage. It's not my primary TV, but I'm using it pretty much every day because I'm out there. That's where I have my home gym, so I'm out there working out a lot. And yeah, I'm probably using 4 to 6 apps on a monthly basis out there in the garage, so I'm probably distorting the number a little bit. The other thing that really struck me from this data was that the Inscape says that 55% of people using these TVs, 55% of those TVs are streaming exclusive. That's the only way they watch television. And that was really startling. It's not so much because if you look at the data, suggests it should be around there. So, for example, there are 57 million cable, satellite, and telco TV homes in the US. So that puts the penetration at about 44%. So this actually is right in line with that data, right? But it's still startling to look at it because there really has been such a huge shift over the last 5 to 6 years to streaming as being primary for so many people in their homes. The one thing I will note is this actually is a little bit different. You might, if you've been looking at Nielsen's The Gauge data, you might think that this sounds really, really high and you're trying to figure out why. Well, there's a simple reason that the Gauge data puts virtual MVPDs, the 18 million homes or 18 million subscriptions to virtual MVPDs, in with cable. So they actually put that streaming activity in with cable. But the Inscape data counts that with the streaming. So that's why there's a little bit of a disparity there. But it's still pretty startling, I thought. But there is one exception that Inscape sort of carved out as being different. And that, remarkably, is live events. When Inscape reported the viewing time, not by TVs, we see that streaming occupies about 61% of viewing time. But 79% of time spent watching news is via traditional TV sources, and 72% of time is spent watching sports through traditional TV. So even, you know, as late as Q4 2023, those live news and sports are still mostly watched, or there's more watching, longer watching through traditional sources than through stream sources. But, you know, I've got to tell you, Will, that's probably going to change, right? Particularly if Disney, Fox and Warner Brothers Discovery release their sports streaming app, and we're seeing news providers simulcasting. So I think we talked about on the podcast last week, BBC News is now simulcasting on their cable channel now on fast services like Pluto TV and Samsung TV Plus. So this is clearly changing as well. So anyway, that's free. This is a free report from Inscape. I'll include a link in my posting for this, and I'm sure you will too. It's great data.
Yeah, it is great data, and I you know what you said all the way at the beginning, Colin, I think is really critical, that this is actual user behavior that Inscape is able to monitor and measure and report out on. It's not survey data, and that's you know, as we found, it can be a big difference.
A big difference, because, you know, having run surveys, people will tell you one thing and they're actually doing something quite different. What you think you're doing is very often not what you're actually doing. So this is what people are actually doing.
Well, we don't want to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but you have some survey data which talks right. about spending, right?
Right, I was just going to say, let's not diss survey data, because our next piece is actually about survey data, which comes from Deloitte, and they've been doing their digital media trends report for 18 years now, and I think we've talked about prior versions of it many times, but they released their new one, and one of the key takeaways is they found, again, in their survey of American households that subscribe to streaming video services, that their monthly spend is now averaging $61, and that's for four streaming services. And that compares to a year ago where consumers were spending $48. So it's up, essentially up 27% in a year. And needless to say, that's way ahead of the rate of inflation. And excuse me, we know all too well, and as do our listeners, that the price of streaming services has been going up steadily across the board. There's not a single service that hasn't raised their price at least once, if not more than once, over the past year or two. And that, I think, might help explain why another piece of their data, Deloitte's data, is that 48% of those responding to the survey said that they would cancel their favorite streaming service, SVOD service, if their price, the monthly price, went up by $5. You know, as we were just talking about, there's obviously a big difference between what people say they're going to do and what people actually do. So we don't want to take that 48% to the bank. But I do think that it reflects a, you know, widespread concern that people have that the prices of streaming services have gone up a fair amount, and they've gone up pretty quickly. So that, I think, feed that and other, the fact that people are subscribing to so many different services now, feed into a little bit of jitteriness and churn. And in fact, Deloitte found that about 36% of those surveyed said that the content available on streaming services is not worth the current price. And there's a lot more data in the Deloitte report also, I think, that points to the propensity toward churning out. 40% said that they had canceled a SVOD service sometime in the past 6 months. That was about even with a year ago. And, you know, again, a bunch of different points here. But I think we all, probably all in agreement at this stage, that there's a lot of great content out there. It's spread over a lot of different services. Those services prices have increased rapidly in the last, you know, couple of years or so, and that at some point most consumers are on a budget, and they're going to need to figure out which services they want to hold on to and which ones they don't, and that leads to the churn problem.
It certainly does, and yeah, I think it is probably true to say that at least for the time being, these above inflation in price increases in the SVOD services have got to slow down. Although, of course, we know that though 42% say they will cancel if it increases $5, that a much smaller percentage will actually follow through. The truth is that 42% is a very high number of people that say that they will cancel. And even if 25% follow through, that still means you're going to lose 10% of your subscribers. And that's a big hit. So I think, you know, this data should give the SVOD providers pause to think very hard about the increases that they're going to try and force us to pay later this year, which usually seems to happen towards the end of the year. And actually, it sort of reminds me of something that popped up in the Inscape report, Will. And that was that they really looked at traditional pay TV users. And what they did see was they saw... So they're able to monitor when people go to another input. So say you go to HDMI 1 to watch your pay TV service. Many people still have a set-top box that they're doing that. What they found in Q4 was that 6.4% of people that were using a traditional pay TV service no longer watch content from the input that they were watching before. And that's up from 4% earlier in Q4 2022. So that seems to really jibe with the increase in cord cutting the increase in cord cutting that we saw in the numbers, both from people like Bruce Leishman and my the numbers that I track too. But they also uncovered a really interesting fact. They said that 15% of viewers decreased their cable or satellite viewership on that input, on that other input, by 75% or more in Q4 2023. And in addition, 27% decreased their viewership by 50% or more. So what that tells you is that those people that have traditional pay TV and are going to those inputs, a lot of them are using it a lot less over that in that quarter. And what that tells you is that cord cutting is not going to slow down, because when they go and review their bills and they realize, you know, they want to cut the amount they're spending, by far the most that they're spending is on that pay television. If suddenly they realize they're only spending 25% of their time with their pay television subscription, that could be first on the block when they want to save money, because they save so much money by getting rid of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, we've talked for a long time that as consumers, as viewers, think about their, you know, where they're spending time with the, you know, what service they're spending time with on a nightly basis, they start to, you know, subconsciously and then very consciously realize that they're spending on services that they're not really using. And those that cost the most clearly become the most vulnerable to getting cut. And, you know, as you said, I mean, the cost of a pay TV service is still much, much greater than any streaming services. So it's an easy target for big savings.
Right. And talk about saving money, Will. There was some new data this week from HarrisX about the number of people that prefer to watch movies in the movie theater. And what they said was that about 34% of people in their survey of 1,000 folks said that they prefer to watch movies in a theater. And interestingly, this jibes almost exactly with a poll that was put out by PCH in 2023, which I reported on, to actually a much larger survey group, over 17,000 people in their survey group. And that reported that 32% preferred to watch movies in a theater. And before you get all excited, if you're in the theater industry, the margin of error on the HarrisX data is plus or minus 3%. So in my book, what this says is there has been no improvement, no expansion in the number of people that prefer to watch movies in the theaters. And so I pulled some data to actually check this out, to figure out, you know, what's going on. And according to my calculations, at least, there has been an increase in 2023 in the number of tickets purchased per person in the US. So on an annual basis in 2023, 2.47 tickets were purchased per person. That is up from 2.11 in 2022. But we are still way down from pre-pandemic levels. In 2018, for example, 4 tickets per person were purchased. So there's a long way to go with recovery there. And linking back to the money train, the things that people really pointed at the most as being the reason they don't go to movie theaters is ticket cost and concession cost. Those were by far the top thing. Ticket cost was the biggest thing, over 50% saying that. And interestingly, I checked the ticket cost, the average ticket cost, and that hadn't gone up very much, Will. So I think it's the overall cost of going to the theaters that people are unhappy with. It's the fact that you have to buy, you know, 3 or 4 tickets for everybody in the family. You have to get the popcorn. You have to drive there. It's just a very expensive outing. And particularly when you consider that if you just wait a few months now, your favorite movie will show up in a streaming service and you can watch it on your big, beautiful Ultra HD TV with your soundbar or surround sound systems and stream it in Ultra HD. You know, it's a great experience now in many people's homes. So, you know, I think there's another example of people cutting costs and theaters are paying the price.
Yeah, I think that's right, Colin. I think the studios really cooked their goose on compressing the windows from theatrical release to streaming. And I'm not sure that they really had a choice on this. So it's not like, oh, there was something else they could have done that would have been far superior. But I do believe that they have trained us as movie goers, as movie watchers, to the idea that anything that's in the theater is going to be on available on streaming somewhere relatively soon. And it's going to be, you know, far more cost effective to watch it at home than it is in the theaters. So that then, I think, elevates the expectation for how good the movie has to be in order to motivate people to spend the extra. So, you know, if it's a spectacle like an Oppenheimer or something like that, then yes. But for lots of smaller movies, it's just that the numbers just don't make sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. And of course, also factoring into this is the fact that I think people are just pretty tired of the franchises, right? And that really seems to be where Hollywood is hanging its hat these days.
Yeah, I completely agree. So anyway, we have covered a lot of ground here this week, Colin. Hopefully our listeners were able to follow all that. We will include links, as you said earlier. We will include links to these reports and maybe some coverage of them as well, so that listeners can catch up offline.
Very good.
Okay, good chatting, Colin. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will see you all again on next week's Inside the Stream.
Inside the Stream is a production of InScreen Media and Video News, all rights reserved.